It started last week as the first ships returned from the Persian Gulf to their home ports. On TV, we saw the tears and the flowers and the hugs in San Diego and Pearl Harbor, a simple euphoria all of us can understand. But the veterans and their families may have more complicated reactions once they leave the docks and the airports. They've changed in the months since they've seen each other. Children have been born, spouses dealt with new challenges, veterans endured separation and, in many cases, combat. In this hour of Talk of the Nation, we'll explore the issues of coming home for the veterans and for the families. What are the unexpected stresses servicemen face when they rejoin their families? Is the experience different for the women who were deployed? And how do families have to adjust when mom or dad comes home? How do you go from the intensity of conflict to the workaday routine of normal life? And in a war where reservists were used so heavily, how do they get back to life in the civilian world? We want to hear from veterans this hour and their families from this and earlier conflicts. Or do you currently have a family member overseas? What are your concerns for their return? Tell us about your experiences with homecoming. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And joining us now from Falls Church, Virginia, is Dr. Michael Kilpatrick, Deputy Director of Deployment Health Support for the Defense Department. And thanks for being with us today, Doctor.
You're more than welcome. It's my pleasure.
What are the main issues that service members face when they come home from war?
Well, I think one of the major issues, as you said so clearly, is that this is a tremendous change of pace for them in their lives. They've been deployed, they've been enduring combat, they've been in support of combat, and now they're coming home to a family that they've been certainly wanting to see and a family waiting for them to come home. And everything goes from a very fast pace in the deployment to being home with all of the public cameras present, and then it comes to being home and readjusting. All of those duties and obligations that the spouse at home and the family have picked up, expecting to be able to give them back, and perhaps a service member saying, you're doing a great job, and maybe I don't want those things back. These become very individualized issues, and I think from the Department of Defense standpoint, we work very hard at letting people know that the reintegration into family life may not be as smooth as one would anticipate, and to make sure that they take the process slowly.
Are there parts of this that those of us who haven't gone through it probably wouldn't think of?
I think so, because particularly for service members coming home to children, many times the children are obviously happy to see mom or dad come home, but maybe angry that they were gone, or maybe feel that they were a reason that the mom or dad went away. And so being able to have time to reestablish those ties and not to try to rush the relationship back to where it was, because, as we know, all relationships change over time. And that child has grown, and mom or dad's been away for 6 or 9 months. It is kind of getting to know somebody who is not quite is comfortable, and that takes some time and process.
Yeah, and there it's a little awkward a lot of the time.
It certainly can be, and that's where we really try to get information out to school systems, to teachers, to certainly help in this process, because the expectation is, well, you ought to be fine now and happy because mom or dad's home. And there's still those growing issues that need to be worked through that do take time.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address, TOTN@NPR.org. And let's start with Paul, who joins us from Appleton, Colorado.
Yes, hi. I have a brother who's in the Special Forces, and he had been training the servicemen for many, many years into the fires of many different types of battles, from Ronald Reagan's all the way up to this present time. And he had a certain kinship with the servicemen. And so this new kind of war really changed him, where before he had a certain belief in what he was doing. This new one, it has very much thrown him. As you may know, I haven't heard it raised yet, but virtually everyone in the special forces have been now locked into, they cannot resign, they cannot retire from the armed services. This war, to end all wars, this 100-year war or whatever, this never-ending war that George Bush has come up with, has now forced it into a sort of an involuntary servitude for all of these servicemen, and my brother would like to retire, and he cannot.
I think the phrase the military uses is stop loss. Isn't that right, Dr. Kilpatrick?
That's correct, and I think as we take a look at the skill sets that are needed, this war, certainly Operation Iraqi Freedom, has emphasized the special technology and training that the special forces bring to our ability to wage war in a new technology manner. And I think that the focus is how do we recruit and retain individuals. When you go into a stop-loss situation, you do a lot negative for morale, and I am very confident within the Department of Defense that there are crash programs being put in place so that those people who have served, who have gone in harm's way, do have that choice to be able to get out, and still the service able to maintain its ability to meet the needs that may be on the horizon.
Mm-hmm. But what does this mean for an illegal war like this, where someone is trained to do something in a patriotic way, and all of a sudden all of their training, all of the people that they have trained, are all of a sudden being forced into doing something that is illegal and wholly opposed to the Constitution? Soldiers are supposed to disobey illegal orders, and now he isn't even able to communicate with those he is trained to oppose the illegal orders.
Well, Dr. Kilpatrick, are there recourses for people who might believe that they're being asked to do something that goes against their conscience?
Well, certainly there are programs in place that people who have concerns or issues about their ability to serve because of personal beliefs or personal opinions, I think, are always in place. And I think that certainly the chain of command is always a process to be used, and that is the way to move issues and concerns up. And if there is a person in that chain of command that's not upholding his or her responsibilities, then there certainly are processes to be able to go around that individual and still use the chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the concerns about do I want to still be in the military are ones that the person does have a tremendous amount of rights, and they just need to be able to exercise the process that's in place.
Let's go now to Cindy, who joins us from Cleveland, Indiana.
No, it's Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay, somebody mistyped.
That's all right. Okay, I have a cousin who's serving in the Special Forces in Bagram, Afghanistan. His mother had an operation last Wednesday. They didn't want to contact him then because they didn't want him to worry since he's out in the field. And she died unexpectedly yesterday.
Oh, I'm sorry for that.
So am I. And I want to know how to handle it when he comes home. I'm not sure if he's going to be angry if he finds out that he died and that she wasn't sick, or, you know, what kind of things can I do as part of the family to make it easier for him and his new wife?
Dr. Kilpatrick?
Well, I think that these are always very difficult situations, and I'm sorry to hear. I mean, this is not what a service member expects when he or she deploys, is to have a family member at home become ill and die. So trying to get information across, I think using the chain of command again within the unit to get information to the individual. The Red Cross often plays a role in talking to, getting information to family members, active duty members who have had a family member who've died. And I think that needs to be the first to make sure the information is relayed to the individual so that the team that he is with can help prepare him for coming home.
Mm.
I think that people have a mission when they are deployed. If they know that there's a family member who's ill, they have to make that hard call. Is it, do I do the mission? Do I come home to the family?
Mm-hmm.
If They were not expecting the illness to be of a nature where the individual was at risk of dying. They may elect to stay, and then you always start to second guess yourself, and that's where using chaplains to help work the individual through, and I think that's what everyone needs to do together, because when you make a decision like that, you can't undo it.
Uh-huh.
And I think to be supportive and to have that active duty member come home and be supportive of the decisions were made at home to try to protect him while he was deployed and keep his focus on the mission.
Uh-huh.
This really was a decision made together. You don't try to prepare that decision ahead of time. You don't have that opportunity.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's just saying we were all in this together, and I think that getting any support and care through the military from Family Service Center or chaplains can really help move this forward.
Cindy, again, our condolences for your loss.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Dr. Kilpatrick, obviously the experiences of those who served in the Iraqi theater differed a lot depending on which units they were stationed in. Does the military keep track of which troops experience the most difficult periods of combat and tailor services to them?
I think that the services in general are available across the board because it's you really can't predict what sort of stressors, be it heat, cold, hunger, being in an area where you may be lost for a period of time or being in combat are all very different situations, and people do react differently. So across the board, there is a very supportive system to provide that medical attention to individuals. And we do try to take real focus on where were people located, what were their assignments, what were the people with heavy combat involvement, what were people that were involved with having to be involved in burial details. These sorts of things, I think, we know are tremendous psychological stressors. We want to make sure that there is attention for them. And in the deployed setting, we have combat stress teams in the theater to try to provide that kind of attention right up front at the time. If people are looking at not having good coping skills or not doing well with what they've experienced, then we really do focus attention on those individuals. We are very focused as people come home to ask them, do they have any health concerns? Do they have anything that they are concerned about that they may need some help from a chaplain or a counselor? We are really encouraging the commanders to let their folks know it's okay to go to medical care. This is not a sign of weakness. This is you've been under tremendous stressors and in that battle situation. You do need to have access to health care. We've trained our health care providers to ask people, do you have any concerns that you're here today because you think these symptoms are related to a deployment? So we're addressing that right up front in a very positive way with those men and women who've been deployed. So I think that we have the overall healthcare capability, and then it's focused depending on what the individual believes that they may need.
Dr. Kilpatrick, thanks very much for being with us today.
More than welcome.
Dr. Michael Kilpatrick is the Defense Department's Deputy Director for Deployment Health Support, and he joined us from his office in Falls Church, Virginia. When we come back from a break, we'll be speaking with Stephen Robinson, a combat veteran and an executive director of the National Gulf War Resource Center, and we'll be taking more of your calls. We're talking about returning troops and how they can adjust to family and daily life after time in the combat zone. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or you can send us email, totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're talking about returning troops and the process of readjustment to normal life after a long deployment. Have you been through this process from the military or from the family side? Are you waiting for a loved one to come home now? You're invited to join our discussion. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now in Studio 3A is Stephen Robinson, a combat veteran and executive director of the National Gulf War Resource Center, Incorporated. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Has the military changed its handling of veterans' issues since, I guess, the last Gulf War, and if so, how?
I think in a lot of ways they've made some significant improvements. They've recognized that some of the things that occur in war besides bullets and bombs are harmful, and so they're taking some steps to identify those things. And in particular with your topic for today's show, some of the things they have recognized is that there are significant changes in both the service member and the person who stays behind at home, and how they should be educated to reunite and be able to carry on with a successful relationship once they come back. Overall, there are some good things. There are a few things that we're concerned about as an organization, and I've been on NPR, I think, in a previous program and talked about that.
With Ira Flatow, yeah.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get back to the phones and hear some of the specific concerns that people have. Joining us now is Derek, who's in Fairfield, California.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a Gulf War veteran, and I served for a long period of time in the United States Air Force. And with regard to your topic today, I just wanted to say that the military is an all-volunteer force today, as you well know. The number of people in the military actually make up a very small percentage of our population. Unfortunately, as over the years, especially since the end of the Vietnam War and the end of the draft, there's been fewer and fewer people in families throughout this country who have actually served in the military, or perhaps have even known anyone that has served in the military at all. So it's very difficult for the layman, if you will, to understand the difficulties of deploying overseas, spending several months overseas each year, and then especially after combat having to redeploy and reunite with their families.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to say from my own personal perspective that it is very difficult. It does take a very committed family unit to accomplish that reunification. And it's not going to be seamless, but it's going to be bumpy at best. But if both parties, the spouse and the military member, as well as the other members of the family, including the children, are committed to the relationship, that it has a much better chance of being successful. That also ties into the increased rate of divorce that we have in this country today. It seems like people are just not interested in long-term committed relationships in many cases, and that perpetuates the problems that the returning service members have. I also have one other comment relating to the first caller you had. As far as the military members themselves, they're well aware of the fact that the needs of the military, especially in times of war, come first. And for the most part, I think most people understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that individual who was on the phone talking about his relative has actually served in the military, I don't know.
And whether he actually speaks for his relative also, we're not sure.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I'm saying is that, you know, the civilian control of our military is something that is written into the Constitution. And for the majority of the people that serve in the military today, I think they fully do understand, and I certainly understood, that, you know, my needs are not going to come first, especially when the decision has been made at the highest political levels, National Command Authority, to exercise our military in support of national objectives. And that's exactly what President Bush has done, and I commend him for seeking the future security of our country.
Mm-hmm. Derek, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Steve Robinson, you know, one of the questions that he raised is, you know, again, that question of with the all-volunteer military. There are sometimes, it seems, almost different cultures that have arisen, separate.
Yeah, you know, how you interpret your military service has a lot to do with what you bring to the table when you get there. I was raised in a military family, so service was something I've known at birth. We moved every 3 years. I joined at 18, and I've moved every 3 since. So it wasn't unusual for me to be deployed for up to a year at a time. But, of course, it had an impact on my spouse, my first spouse.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't understand that commitment. So things have changed over time. And I think increasingly, since about the Clinton administration, reservists have really felt the brunt of our deployments. And they, unlike the active duty force, are in a unique perspective on are a unique situation in that they're citizen soldiers. The active duty force is absolutely committed. They should go out and they serve at the needs of the president when and if and whatever. The reserve forces are on call. And when they do get called up and used, quite often it's a shock. But since about the Clinton era, they've increasingly been used more and more. And so we need to educate not only the service member, but the family unit that here's what's going to happen when.
And with reservists and National Guard, employers as well, and all those support units. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Joining us now is Meredith Leyva, the founder of SyncHouse.com, a website for the wives of servicemen. She joins us from her home in Panama City, Florida, where her husband is stationed with the Navy's Experimental Dive Unit. And good of you to join us again on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks, Neil.
We've been listening to some experiences from the service members' side of things. Tell us a little bit of what it's like for the wife when the husband returns.
Well, I appreciate the service members who have spoken on this program for recognizing that it is also difficult for the wives as well. You know, you think about this latest deployment. We're talking about historically high levels of deployments at this point, reaching 9 and 10 months away from home. So you can imagine the incredible separation and the strangeness of having this person come back into your home and try to reassert authority as both a parent and a spouse. That often causes a tremendous amount of discomfort, while at the same time feeling overjoyed and relieved that your husband and the father of your children has come back home.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get some more callers in. Debbie joins us now from Eagan, Minnesota.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband is a chief warrant officer in the Marine Corps. He was in the reserves, but he was activated for duty shortly after September 11th in 2001. So in May, he will have been gone almost a year and a half.
Wow.
Anxiously awaiting his return.
I bet.
We have three boys, ages 16, 13, and 10, and our youngest boy has complex medical needs and multiple disabilities and needs round-the-clock nursing care. So we've had a very stressful time just having to do this with just one parent. So we're all expecting my husband's return. We're excited about it. However, our son had to have surgery last month, and so my husband was called for an emergency leave from the Middle East to donate blood. He was my son's directed blood donor.
Right.
So now, when he got back from the leave, he went back to Camp Pendleton, where he had been stationed before his overseas deployment. And so he's actually feeling depressed, as though he let down the Marine Corps and didn't finish his mission.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to figure out how, when he gets home shortly, you know, how to adjust in that we're happy about his return, but he's having kind of bad feelings. He was in logistics and planning, so he did a lot of work prior to the war, but he did not, he feels like he did not finish the job.
Let down the side, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Robinson, all kinds of stresses.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but that's typical response to the question that you're asking is to give your spouse the time to adjust to being home.
Mm-hmm.
Try not to schedule activities for him. Don't expect him to immediately jump in and take on his old chores.
Okay.
Understand that he's going to need time to adjust to all the different things about coming home. Mm-hmm. But from my perspective, and I think everybody else that's listening, there's no shame in doing what he did, and he shouldn't feel slighted for not having completed something. And I guarantee you that all of his Marines that he works with understand why he left and that it's acceptable.
Uh-huh.
So just reinforce that with him, and I'm sure that with that and care and time, everything will be fine.
Okay.
Debbie, thanks very much, and good luck.
Okay, thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Let's go now to Tira. Am I pronouncing that right, in San Diego?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I just want to reflect on a couple of callers that called before on saying that when my husband was in boot camp, all the people that he talked to always were saying, you know, there's a really high divorce rate, you've got to be serious about going into it, and things of that nature. And I really do agree, because we've been through lots of hard times, and he was in Italy for 2 years, 9 months of which he missed his son, his firstborn son. And when he came back, he just
missed the birth of his son.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
so tremendously bad, and we stayed in the U.S. after 9/11 just to play it safe. And it takes an excruciating amount of patience to know when to stress the situation and to when to let it go and let things flow and know when it's going to be back to normal. And on the wives' part, too, it's really hard to be the forefront of your household and then have someone come back in and think that he's going to go right back into things, and when he's not psychologically ready for it, he stresses himself out more and thinks that he's not a good father or he's not a good role model. And I just want to say, you know, we know the other side of it too, you know, and the military members get really stressed out that they're not going to be able to fess up to their responsibilities right away because they can't get back into the schedule. When my husband came out of boot camp, we took him out to dinner, and right after eating, he put all his silverware in the cup on the plate and sat there quiet. I said, honey, it's okay to talk. You're not in training anymore. And he said, oh, I'm sorry. And it takes an enormous amount of courage to break through that and reenter your family and try to go into everyday activities.
Yeah. Meredith?
That's an amazing story, and I definitely hear a lot about that. Guys coming home, dropping their dirty clothes on the floor, you know, not thinking to pick them up, and then treating the kids to ice cream for dinner every night because they just feel so guilty about having left home. And we certainly get a lot of you know, do a lot of counseling on those kinds of issues. And, you know, what I've tried to encourage wives to date is to try to communicate as much as possible with their husbands away, and also get the kids to communicate. And I think that's important because that if you can even get daily communication, the husband doesn't feel as bad going away,
right,
and still feels part of their lives. But similarly, he can still play an active role as a parent because you guys can talk about decisions together and enforce decisions together. Mm-hmm. And so it's not as strange when he comes home when he tries to reassert his role as a parent in particular.
Yeah, this is one of my points to, you know, if you're going to go into it seriously and not try to quit after you've gone through so much, communication is the first key to being a successful military family, because you cannot keep all your feelings inside, and that's what produces the high divorce rate.
That's true. And you know what? Seriously, kudos to you, because this sense of independence and self-sufficiency on the part of the wives is also what makes that kind of marriage work.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tira, thanks very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go now to Judy, who's with us from Clarksville, Tennessee.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for having me, you know, talk to you. Well, I've always listened to your show.
Oh, well, thanks very much. And your question?
Oh, I just had a comment. I wanted to say, give a big kudos to all the wives out there married to soldiers. I was once a soldier, and now I'm married to a soldier, so I kind of have the perspective of being, I was also in combat in the Gulf War, so I have the perspective of having been a soldier and now being married to a Special Forces soldier, which is pretty tough.
Yeah, but does it help having been a soldier yourself? You have a little more understanding?
Yes, absolutely, because you can see, you know what happens when you go to combat, and you've been there, you've done that, so when he's doing that, you have that added knowledge, although I have to admit that I was a regular soldier. Of course, I wasn't Special Forces or anything like that, and I wasn't totally fully aware of what it would entail being married to a Special Forces soldier. They're gone much more than the regular soldier. There's no communication. You don't get phone calls or mail or anything for months at an end. So it's a little bit tougher, but it did help that I had the previous background.
Hmm. Well, Judy, when is your husband due home?
He didn't deploy this time. He was injured severely during in Afghanistan, so he stayed. But I know he wants to be there. So it's been tough because he's been home. So there's two sides to that. You know, when they do stay back, it's very difficult for them, and it can be difficult on the family as well.
Hmm. Well, hang in there. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to Susan, and Susan is in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Yes, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I wanted to comment. I'm a 46-year-old Army brat, and I was born on a military base, and my father was in the military for 20 years. So I can kind of comment on the long-term effect of my father being gone so much. He would pull 13 months twice in Korea, and then we went with him to Germany and Japan and everything. But while my father was gone, I saw a different side of my mother that I think helped me down the line to say, you know, I can be responsible for myself completely. You know, I don't have to have somebody there to mow the lawn. Knowing that he was going to come home, and of course communication nowadays is a little bit different than back then. All we had was letters. But my mother, you know, stood up to the plate and did everything that was necessary. And then when my father came home, there was a little bit of a time where we all kind of settled into the newness of it. But most of the time we didn't have time because we were being deployed as a family someplace else. So it was usually an afterthought. We were too busy packing up and moving along. And it was more of a lifestyle than I think more people realize. It's not just a job. Hmm. It is a lifestyle that you take on. But I watched my mother, you know, care for my sister and I and get a job and, you know, mow the lawn and take care of the house and pay the bills, so that I knew I could do that too. And I think in the long run it has made me more independent.
It's interesting. We got an email I'd like to read from Heather. My husband has been deployed several times during his Air Force career. He is a reservist now, was activated in March. Separations can be very difficult, but one thing I've noticed is that both my husband and I change a great deal when we're apart. We each develop new interests and abilities as a consequence of separation. This can make homecomings awkward, but the time I spend apart from my husband lets me get to know myself better. This has only strengthened our marriage. Getting to know each other all over again can actually be fun. So I guess there is a good side to it. Susan, thanks very much. We appreciate
it. Thank
you. And I'd like to thank both of our guests for being with us today. With me here in the studio, Stephen Robinson, Executive Director of the National Gulf War Resource Center, and joining us from Panama City, Florida, Meredith Leyva. Her website for the Wives of Servicemen is sinchouse.com, sinchouse.com. And thank both of you for coming in today. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you, Neil.